Black Sky by Asterisk Brooks Hammer. Big Sky Country, Absaroka Range, Montana, Day 1. 5:45 hours, 3 days before Black Sky. The West Clock's baby bin struck its twin brass bells, and the sound cut through the cabin like a klaxon on a cold flight deck. No digital display, no silicon, no connection to any satellite currently drifting over the Absaroka peaks. Just a mechanical spring, an iron hammer, and 60 years of proving it worked after everything else didn't. Mac McKenzie's hand shot out from under the wool quilt and killed the bells before the third strike. Muscle memory. 40 years of scramble orders had wired the response into his tendons. He lay still, eyes adjusting to the dark geometry of lodgepole pine rafters overhead, and listened. No high-frequency whine from a charger. No smart fridge handshaking with a server farm in Virginia. No Wi-Fi pulse. Just wind scraping the eaves and the hollow tick of the clock measuring time the old way. 1 second at a time, he sat up, his left knee ground in its socket like a stripped bearing. Titanium pins and Dacron mesh held it together, souvenirs from a 2019 test flight at Edwards that ended in what the accident report called an unscheduled disassembly of his airframe. The knee functioned, mostly. But it had its own internal barometer, and this morning the deep bone ache told him the pressure was falling fast. Mac was 58, iron gray hair cropped short out of habit. Crow's feet etched from squinting at instrument panels against solar glare at 60,000 feet. A jagged scar above the left eyebrow from a canopy strike during low altitude ejection over the Mojave. He pulled on denim and flannel and walked barefoot into the kitchen. The pine floor bit cold against his soles. The ranch house was 1,200 square feet of stone and timber he'd hauled and notched himself over 3 summers. The refrigerator was a 1987 Kenmore that growled on startup. Stove ran on gravity-fed propane. Coffee came from a hand-cranked grinder and a French press. The only concession to the modern century was a Western electric rotary dial telephone bolted to the wall, its cord stretching exactly 6 feet. He cranked the grinder. The burrs chewed through the beans with a low rasping sound that vibrated up through his wrist and forearm. The smell of dark roast filled the room, pushing back against the cold air leaking under the door frame. Out the window, the sun crowned the eastern peaks and painted the snowfield in shades that didn't belong in any cockpit display, raw gold, then pink, then the hard white of full morning. He poured into a ceramic mug. EDWARDS AFB Test Pilot School, Class of 94. Black, no sugar. The coffee tasted like JP-8 smelled. He'd never found a better compliment. The sun had just cleared the ridgeline when he heard the engine. Rhythmic thrum, slightly rough idle, a lifter tick on every fourth cylinder. He knew the vehicle before he stepped onto the porch. A 2004 Jeep Cherokee kicked up a rooster tail of dust on the gravel road. Sarah McKenzie stepped out with the careful balance of a pilot adjusting to a shifting center of gravity. 28 years old, Max Steelgray eyes set in her mother's dark-haired face, a SpaceX flight jacket unzipped to reveal the 7-month curve beneath.
"You're up early," Mac leaned against the porch rail.
"I work in aerospace." She climbed the steps and accepted the mug of decaf he'd prepared, a compromise she'd made with visible reluctance when the pregnancy test came back positive. She sipped, winced at the weakness of it, and set it on the rail. "This is cruel doctor's orders. The doctor doesn't fly," Mac almost smiled, almost ready to fly, not a question. Born ready, but her eyes tracked the western sky with a technician's calibration. She had her mother's gift, calculating risk 3 moves ahead of the board. Forecast has winds at 15 knots, gusting to 25 at the ridgeline. Good flying weather. You didn't check the forecast. When I learned to fly, we felt the air in the seat of our pants and made decisions.
"You also crashed more," she said it flat. "Learned faster."
She almost smiled. Almost. The hangar sat a quarter mile from the house, a steel pole barn saturated with the smell of 100 LL Avgas and hydraulic fluid. The walk down took them along the fence line where the grass had gone stiff with frost, each blade glazed and brittle underfoot. Neither of them spoke. Inside, Max Cessna 172 Skyhawk waited, 1978, white and blue, tail number N724MC. His initials, the year he'd first soloed, the airplane breathed in the cold air, its aluminum skin ticking as the hangar warmed. No glass cockpit, no GPS, no autopilot. The panel carried the classic six-pack of mechanical gauges, airspeed, altimeter, attitude indicator, turn coordinator, heading indicator, vertical speed. Mac began the pre-flight with surgical intensity. He'd seen the price of shortcuts, had been the one to write the incident reports. He inspected the Lycoming O320 engine, checked the cowling fasteners by feel, ran his fingertips along the propeller's leading edge searching for nicks invisible to the eye. The metal was cold enough to sting. He held contact anyway. You didn't learn an airframe through gloves. He sumped the fuel tanks and held the clear vial up to the light, checking for water contamination. Clean. He drained the vial into the grass and moved to the control surfaces, working the ailerons by hand, feeling for resistance, for anything binding in the cables.
Sarah watched from the hangar door, one hand on her belly. I could pull real-time weather on the tablet. Satellite data, wind shear alerts, pressure gradients. Mac didn't look up from the engine cowling. And then what?
I'd trust the data. Data doesn't know how the air feels. He pulled a rag from his back pocket and wiped his hands, deliberate, slow. It doesn't know if the thermals are building or collapsing. Data's a tool, not a replacement for judgment. He met her eyes, besides. Half the satellites feeding that tablet are held together with duct tape and optimism. What happens when they go dark? They won't.
Everything goes dark eventually. Mac walked toward her, flight boots crunching on the gravel apron. His right thumb twitched against his forefinger, the old tell, the one he'd carried since Edwards. Your generation thinks the grid is permanent. It's not. And when it fails, not if, Sarah, the ones who survive will be the ones who remember dead reckoning.
He stopped 2 feet from her, close enough that the smell of avgas mixed with the cold morning air between them.
I'm teaching you this because I want my grandkid to have a mother who can solve problems without asking a machine for permission.
Sarah's jaw tightened, then softened. You're going to be impossible as a grandfather. Get in, you're flying.
She taxied to the grass strip, held the center line during the ground roll, and rotated at 55 knots. Climb at 75. Precise. Clean. The Cessna responded to her hands like it trusted her, the control surfaces finding their authority in the cold, dense air. She had logged T-38 simulator hours during an Air Force exchange program her second year at SpaceX, one of the few civilians cleared for the course. She was a better pilot at 28 than Mac had been. He would never say it.
At 5,500 feet, Mac pointed to the VOR receiver. Navigation exercise, Helena. No GPS, that's 100 miles, so.
She reached for the sectional chart paper, coffee-stained, creased along the folds from years of use. She tuned the VOR to Helena's frequency, identified the Morse code ident, 3 dashes, 2 dots, the signal pulsing through the speaker like a heartbeat, and turned to intercept the radial. Below them, Montana unfolded. Rivers cut through valleys. Ranches sat in clearings, isolated, self-sufficient. Dirt roads connected nothing to nothing.
You know what I love about this, Mac said, watching the horizon where the sky darkened toward space. It's quiet, no transponder squawk, no computer broadcasting our position to every surveillance node on the continent. Just us and the air, you sound paranoid. I sound like a man who's been in a cockpit when a remote override tried to take the stick out of my hands. His voice stayed level, but the edge was there, honed to a frequency she would recognize. It's about control. The more you give away, the less you have when things go sideways. Systems have fail-safes on top of fail-safes. That's what they said about Challenger.
She flinched. He saw it. He didn't apologize. Quiet for 10 miles. Just the Lycoming turning steady at 2,300 RPM and the wind singing past the struts. Mac watched her hands on the yoke. Steady, no wasted input. She flew as her mother had done everything, with a precision that appeared effortless and wasn't. He thought about the day her mother died, and then he stopped thinking about it. Some doors stayed closed.
What if my gut is wrong, Sarah said. Then you learn, adapt. Survive, Mac watched the engine gauges. That's what pilots do.
They were 40 miles northwest of the ranch when the radio broke the quiet.
N724MC Helena approach. We have you on radar, state destination. Sarah keyed the mic. Helena approach, N724MC, Cessna 172, VFR to Helena, 5,500. Copy, N724MC, be advised. Forest fire reported 20 miles south of your position. Wind southwest at 15, gusting 25. Smoke may affect visibility.
Mac leaned forward and scanned the horizon. A dark column rose to the south, not weather, smoke. Dense, climbing fast, black at the base and gray where it feathered into the upper winds.
Helena approach, N724MC. Smoke in sight. Can you confirm coordinates?
Nothing long, wrong kind of long.
N724MC, stand by. GPS feed just dropped again.
Mac and Sarah exchanged a glance. No words necessary.
Mac took the mic. Helena approach, we don't need GPS. Give us a lat long or a visual landmark.
Another pause. When the controller came back, the professional comm had thinned.
N724MC, where we're not sure. GPS-guided water bombers were supposed to be on station 10 minutes ago. They haven't checked in. We think the coordinates they received are incorrect.
A cold weight settled behind Mac's sternum. The feeling he'd had at Edwards when the telemetry went wrong, when the numbers on the screen diverged from the physics outside the canopy.
Helena approach, are you telling me the bombers are lost? We're working on it, stand by. Mac turned to Sarah. His voice was flat, clear, already in the cockpit of something far more dangerous than a Cessna 172, heading to the smoke, dead reckoning. Sarah grabbed the sectional. Her hands were steady, her mother's hands. 220. 18 miles, take us there.
They found the fire in 5 minutes. Crown fire, racing through ponderosa pine tops, throwing convective currents that grabbed the Cessna and shook it. The turbulence came in pulses, each one a thermal column rising off the burn, each one strong enough to peg the vertical speed indicator. The smell hit them even through the closed vents. Char and resin and a chemical bite underneath. Sarah's hands danced on the yoke, correcting, compensating, reading the air through the seat, through the controls, through the pitch and yaw before the gauges caught up.
Stay above the smoke layer, Mac said.
The radio erupted, Helena stacking calls, pilots transmitting over each other. Somewhere in the noise, an automated GPS voice repeated its useless mantra, recalculating route. Recalculating route. Mac spotted them. Two DC-10 air tankers circling 10 miles south of the fire line. Holding pattern, not dropping. Their navigation systems had told them they were on target and the machines believed it.
He switched to guard frequency. Air tanker units Cessna and 724MC, do you copy?
Static, he adjusted the squelch, tried again.
Air tanker units, you are 10 miles south of your target. Correction heading 010, acknowledge.
Nothing. The tankers circled, their autopilots faithfully tracking coordinates that didn't exist.
They're slave to the GPS, Sarah said. The feed is wrong and they're following it.
Mac's jaw set, the old calculus, risk against consequence. A 172 against a DC-10, 3,000 pounds against 400,000.
Get me in front of them.
Sarah didn't hesitate. She pushed the nose down and the Cessna Dove, trading altitude for speed, the airframe groaning in the turbulence. At 6,000 feet, Mac flashed the landing light in Morse, Sierra Oscar Sierra. Three short, three long, three short. The lead tanker waggled its wings. Someone in that cockpit was looking outside.
Mac keyed guard, air tanker follow me, I will guide you to the fire. Your GPS is feeding you bad coordinates. Cessna, what the hell is going on? Our nav says we're on target. Your nav is wrong. Look out the window. You see fire, a pause. Negative, we see standby, another pause. Longer, we see smoke to the north. That's your target. Follow me. Now.
3 minutes to the ridge. Sarah flew with her hands light on the yoke, feeling the turbulence, compensating before the instruments caught up. The Cessna didn't fight her.
Drop